welcome one and all once again to Duel Within episode 129. We're joined this week by Martin.
Hello.
And Daniel.
Greetings.
Just a quick note of apology before we begin this week. We had planned to do our Sonic 3 Retrocast last week, and we actually did. But due to various technical issues, that episode was scrapped because... half of it was I was in and out because of my stutter connection for most of it. And the other half was Daniel's recording. Oh, you picked up on the other people. So half of the podcast was just one person talking to themselves. So that would have been a really odd listen. Would have been interesting, but it would have been odd. So
The stars did not align for that one.
Not at all. So we do apologize, and we will come back with it hopefully at a later date, better prepared and... you know, all that other jazz, but we do apologize for that. That said, we do have a fun show for you this week. Funnish show. We had meltdowns and removals and financials and all that other good stuff, but as always, we're going to kick it off by talking about what we've been. And I want to go first because I'm sure Martin and Daniel have spoken about this game so they can give feedback, but as I've noted on Twitter over the past week or so, I started Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate on the Wii U. I have to say, I mean, granted, I'm still in the tutorial phase, and yes, I'm taking this game extremely shabby. Well, not extremely shabby. I think I've put in something like 5 or 6 hours, which I guess for a game it might be so over the course of a week.
But it's pretty good, actually.
That's the way you should be taking it that slowly, to be honest. It takes a lot of getting used to the way the game works.
And that's kind of what I do. I try to do like one or two missions a day if I can. Partially because the game has a really great rollout system, at least to me, as far as like, teaching you the mechanics. Like, as far as I know, you have access to almost every major mechanic at the start of the game, but the game won't teach you about it until it's necessary. And usually it ties it into a mission, which opens up the game more and more. Like, you start off by just going out to the field and killing some enemies who won't attack you. Then you learn about enemies that will, and you get missions, and then you get, you know, like, groups of enemies and stuff like that. Then, you know, killing specific enemies for types of loot that you can pick up from them. So, yeah, it generally rolls these things out, you know, on a mission basis. But at the same time, you have the ability to kind of have all this stuff accessed already. It's just that you won't need it until a mission calls for it, so you don't think about it. But it's like, oh, yeah, I remember seeing these guys in the water, so they're over in Area 11. And by that time, you've been to the water because you had to learn how to swim. So you're like, oh, okay, so I know how to get there the fastest way. And usually it does a pretty good job of mixing up the enemies, so you don't have you won't necessarily be beating up too much getting from point A to point B. I imagine as the game opens up, it's going to be a bit more. It's going to have a lot more variety into enemies that will actually attack you.
Usually you just have a lot of the small guys in an area, and you usually just go for the one big monster that's part of the mission. But sometimes some other big creatures can show up.
Yeah.
So because there are like some monsters that can call for help and stuff like that. Then you will have more guys to worry about. But also later on, these battles just become more and more epic. Basically, just hunting down one monster can take like 30 to 40 minutes because it's very big.
Which I guess is the point of the 50-minute time limit for certain missions. Well, all the missions so far have at 50 minutes. And I guess in the same note, I love how they introduced the big bad of the game. I imagine that's the big bad. It's like one of the early tutorial missions. You go into the water, and you go into an area, and it's like this giant monster, and everybody's like, get the F out of here. You're not going to be able to take him now. Yeah. And it changes the music. And you introduced to him when you enter the area, you can just kind of back out, and he's gone pretty quickly. But it's a great way to introduce a threat, especially being that, you know, these monsters aren't talking, so it's not like you're going to give this villain a huge 20-minute monologue or anything. This is the way to introduce him, and then he's kind of, I imagine, I hope, that he's kind of a threat throughout the game until you kind of get up to the level where you can take him down.
Kind of.
He kind of pops up every now and again, but don't expect him. But he will appear.
Well, I won't expect him, which is I guess my point. It's like I kind of like the idea of him just kind of popping up randomly, kind of like Nemesis from Resident Evil 3, where like the purpose isn't to engage him in battle, but to kind of freak you out and kind of give urgency to anything you're doing. I mentioned before, I haven't mentioned on the show, I guess, I'm working with dual blades, which I think, I mean, at least for me, were, I think, the great beginner's weapon, because I know a lot of the problems people have with getting into the game is just kind of knowing, like, the animations and how you can, you know, evade and stuff like that, because it's not a typical lock-on and you just kind of made an enemy until they die. Like, you have to know when their animations and your own animations and when you can kind of evade out of it and when you can block and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Dual Blades gives you the option, because it doesn't really have a defensive side to it, of just kind of attacking. And it's quicker to get in and out of attacks because of your mobility. So it's a great weapon if you're into that. I've tried some of the other ones just to kind of test them out. And I can, you know, I would give some time to, like, the Greatsword and Order Ants. I'm kind of curious. It seems like some of the bow guns, like this giant, I guess, like a crossbow.
Yeah.
That stuff seems like it's stuff that's probably better suited with the team. I could be mistaken.
Yeah,
You can do it alone,
but it's best to have, like, if you're going to dedicate to being a gunner, it's good to have people with you to distract the monsters, because you are very low on defense when you're gunning, and you're a very easy target. So it's possible to do it on your own, just, like, if you're going to dedicate to it, you need to be playing with people.
Well, I play alone for a bit as a gunner. It's not that difficult, but I wouldn't start out with it. Because later on, you would have the possibility to just build a better gun, and of course, build the different ammunition types, which can help you out a lot. Like, if you know that a monster is very weak to a specific kind of element, then of course you can prepare for that with your ammunition, and that of course helps out a lot.
Yeah, I will also say, I guess I haven't gotten to a lot of that stuff yet. Like, I know that there are elemental properties to the weapons, yeah. But that hasn't. I mean,
early on, it's not that important because they are just standard enemies. But at some point, you will encounter enemies that of course have some weaknesses. But most of the time, they are rather obvious. If it's a fire-breathing dragon, most likely it's a fire enemy and will be weak to water.
I assume some of them are going to be pretty on the nose. It's just, because I know, early on, like, part of it, and I think this is pretty cool, is a lot of the time it kind of gives you not necessarily vital, but it does give you a lot of items to prepare for a mission. I don't know if that continues throughout the game.
Yep, they do it for every mission.
Okay.
You'll notice that they tend to give you the same things, though, just, like, a few potions.
Yes, poison darts, some
And if you're going to the cold world, they'll give you hot drinks, and if you're going to the hot world, you get cold drinks. So they give you the basics to survive, but they're not going to give you everything.
They give you the minimum, basically. Yeah. But sometimes, if you're hunting alone, a big enemy, you might want to take some more stuff with you, because the fight might go on longer than the basic stuff that they give you. But that doesn't start until, I don't know, maybe the third area, maybe, you go to.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess one of the, I don't know if this is necessarily something, maybe I'm missing it. One of the things I don't like is that you can't go back to your hut after you pick a mission, so I guess you have to know you get to accept the missions when you want, but just kind of like if you accept it and forgot, oh, I don't have all this equipment, you have to start it over again, or am I missing something there?
No, you accept the mission at the desk, and then you could basically just go back to your, before you start, you have to go out to start.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. You can't go back to your hut in case you missed anything to kind of like get more, like, oh, maybe I'll change my weapon, or maybe I need to kind of get this from my
If you started the mission?
Yeah.
No, then you would have to cancel the mission.
Yeah, yeah. And you pay
a... But it's no big deal, because you don't lose anything.
I thought you paid money.
For some, but at some point money kind of becomes irrelevant.
It's very quickly does money become irrelevant as well.
Yeah.
I mean, so money
is really not the biggest deal. The biggest deal are basically just the resources.
Yeah, it's rare items that you'll struggle to get hold of.
Yeah, that seems to be the biggest one. I do like the fact that it seems to be streamlined in other ways. Like, I like the fact that you don't necessarily need the items on you to kind of forge stuff. Because I could see a lot of games saying, like, oh, yeah, you have these items, but you don't have it on you, so you need to go get them and then come back. It's like, oh, yeah, you have this. We understand. So you can just kind of forge it here, and we'll take it out.
That's something I also really enjoy, that we just know, this is in your stash, do whatever.
Yeah.
Even if you don't have it equipped, or even if it's, like, armor that you have in your item box, if you want to later on, like, put gems in and stuff like that. Or charms, they are called in Monster Hunter, I think.
Yeah.
The only thing that's not in this Monster Hunter, which I kind of miss, is in one of the portable titles. Oh, I forgot which one. I think it was Portables 2, I think. I'm not sure if Monster Hunter 4 introduces back, because I don't know, Earl, if it's yet a problem for you, but cooking meat. I mean, you get used to it, but at some point, you will have to cook a lot of meat. And one of the portable titles had, like, these little cat friends in the town, and you could just pay him to cook the meat for you, which was pretty nice.
You can do that in multiplayer on 3U, I think.
Not really. It's not the same thing.
All right.
As in the portable title. But I think, if I remember correctly, 4 reintroduces the cats, and I also think the cook who can cook all kinds of stuff for you.
Yeah, I mean, there seems to be no exact science to cooking the meat, and it also seems like it doesn't matter sometimes.
There is a sign.
It
changes
cues.
The color.
I do audio cues.
Okay.
And audio cue. And there's an audio cue, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems to... Because, like, sometimes my guy eats raw meat and he's super happy about it. And
no, no, you have to always eat well done.
Okay.
That's what gives you the extra stamina.
Oh, I was just saying that sometimes...
So the music starts, and then there are... Basically, there are three color changes to the meat. The first one you don't want, you want the second one, and the third one is basically burnt.
Yeah, yeah. I've gotten all three. I'm just saying, like, I'll consume some of the raw ones, and, like, one time it took away stamina, and the other time it gave him a huge boost, so I don't really know.
Yeah, I think that's probably random.
Yeah, but well done will always give you a boost.
Yeah.
Okay.
And something you basically always want to do before a hunt, just eat.
Yeah, I try to do that in general, just because you tend to stack up on raw meat pretty quickly. That seems to be one of the things you get fairly often. That in stones, apparently, is a very big thing.
Yeah, stones is something later on not as problematic. Different kinds of ore is something that will be more important later on.
Yeah.
But that, of course, only comes into play once you go into different regions. And every region has, like, different kinds of materials and, of course, different monsters, which might drop different kinds of resources.
It's a fun game. I've been mostly playing it as a single-player title so far. I don't even know if multiplayer has opened up to me yet.
You can do it multiplayer at any point in time.
Yep.
But it's
you just
local,
go to the
only.
Ship.
Oh, okay.
Go to the ship. And
yeah.
There's this cat, I think, you talk to. And then you go to another hub. Basically, you go to another island. And that's basically the multiplayer island. You can do the multiplayer quests on your own. But they are more difficult, or you do them with other people, which makes them easier.
Wait, are they the same as the single-player quests?
No, they are different. The ones early on, some might be similar, but have some little changes to them.
It gets to the bigger monsters much quicker in the multiplayer.
That as well.
Monsters.
And at some point, you grow out of the star quests. Right now, you have a star rating for every quest, right?
Yeah.
And that's also at first in the multiplayer portion, but at some point, even if you finish the single player portion, after I think the 8th star, I think it stops, and then the single player is done. There is an ending and everything. And then multiplayer, you go through star missions, and then you move on to the so-called G-ranked missions, which are even harder, and there you can get even better equipment and stuff like that. And that's the whole point of this ultimate pack because the previous Monster Hunter didn't have all the G-rank stuff, and that's actually a lot of fucking content. It basically doubles the amount of content the game has.
And there's actually a whole bunch of free downloadable missions as well.
Yeah,
which I'm actually kind of surprised with when it comes to Capcom. But
yeah, the only problem I have is with Monster Hunter 3, really, is I have no desire to play single player, and
I played single player. I thought it was really fun.
I
played through the whole single player and then moved on to multiplayer and thought it was really
and
just
it's
great
gotten
experience.
To the point where I don't really like. I'm not really in the mood to play Monster Hunter a whole lot. And when I am, the people that I live with that play it, they're so far ahead with me in the multiplayer missions that I'm dragging them down. So it's kind of,
You should tell them to give you a little boost.
I don't like the underwater missions at all. I'm glad they removed them for 4U.
Yeah, the underwater missions are not that good. I wasn't a big fan of them
awful.
Either.
Awful.
Luckily, there are not that many of them.
So, yeah. I mean, I don't...
Or you can just ignore the multiplayer. It's totally fine.
I don't
because
have...
multiplayer progression is unlike single-player progression. You just don't have to do every quest.
Yeah, I don't...
Just do the main quest.
I just don't have that much desire to play the game. I mean, it's much better. I tried to play Monster Hunter before 3U, and the way the game tutorialized itself back then was terrible. But now it's fine.
Yep.
But I just don't have that much desire to play it.
Yeah, that's one thing I didn't get, and Earl even told me on Twitter, like, I don't know why people say this is so hard to get into. The tutorial is totally fine. And yes, that's what I've been telling people all the time, that Monster Hunter 3U has a totally fine tutorial experience. I think you basically learn everything you need to know at the start.
Yeah, and it takes its time. It's not like it's throwing you against some mega monster. Like, I know one of the big problems people have with it tends to be the camera controls, because it's not like you can kind of focus on the monsters. Even though that's not necessarily true, they do give you that option in this game to kind of have like a monster cam, right?
Yeah.
I guess people just kind of wanted something akin to the Zeox from Zelda games, where it's
The lock-on function is it's pretty much required if you don't use the Circle Pad Pro on 3DS. Because
I guess
the camera controls are awful otherwise.
To be honest, I played with odd lock-on, and it was fine.
You
just have to get used to basically resetting the camera like in Ninja Gaiden. And if you played the original Ninja Gaiden, you're fine.
I was going to say, I guess that's one of the benefits of playing this on the Wii U, is that since it does have dual analog, the camera controls aren't that bad. It's the typical... move the camera with the second analog stick. So that's perfectly fine for me. I don't even use like the center. I can just move the camera most of the time.
Yeah.
And always just kind of have you know where your enemies are and kind of keep the camera focused on them. Yeah. So yeah, let's not turn this into too much of a Monster Hunter talk. I'm sure there's going to be many more to come. So what
we,
have
we
you...
We will have a Monster Hunter cast once the fourth one is out.
Next year, so it's some time to go. So, what have you two been playing?
Well, I have been playing Loadout because it came out on Steam and it was free and it looked fun, so I thought, why not?
It does seem
and
fun. I want to download that.
This game is great. I fucking love this game. Imagine if you took TF2 and made it even more bloody and gory than it already was, and you made it so you could make a rocket launcher that shoots 4 rockets at a time on full auto, and whenever the rockets blow up, they shoot electricity everywhere. And if that sounds like your kind of game, then it probably is, because it's very fast-paced. And you can tell that they made some smart decisions to account for that, like for the fact that, unlike most online multiplayer shooters, you don't have ammo. You reload your gun, but you've got infinite ammo, so you don't have to worry about that. It's so, like, crazy that you can, like, if you get shot in the face a ton and you're still alive, you'll have your eyes and a brain but no head otherwise. It's great. The only problems I have with it are the map design is good, but it doesn't lend itself well to the fact that the game's objective modes, which is kind of strange considering it only has objective based modes. So it'd be decent if it had a TDM mode, but I know the developers refused to put one in. So, you know, and the weapon, because it's free to play, the progression is very slow.
But as far as from what I've heard, is the progression is just for actually unlocking weapon stuff.
Yeah, and it's slow.
I heard
pay for weapons.
Yeah, actually money is just for cosmetic stuff, which yeah. I still think is the only right thing to do.
It's just for cosmetics and increasing the progression rate. So that's all. I mean, it's not objectionable. I just don't like the glacial progression. That's all.
Okay.
I feel like I have to save up forever to buy a new part for my weapons sometimes, and that's kind of annoying. I would much rather just pay for the game, to be honest, but sadly, in today's world, that's not how it works anymore. So otherwise, yeah, I'm playing it still, so it's not that bad. If you've got a computer that can play video games, just install Loadout, because it's fun, honestly. I bought Jazz Punk because I kind of noticed a couple of people were talking about it. I was like, what is this? And it turns out that somebody made that game for me. it's fantastic. It's how do I describe Jazz Punk? It's you could describe it as a first person walking simulator, kind of like Gone Home and stuff, but it doesn't try to be it just tries to be funny. And if you get a lot of video game or computer type references, you'll love it, because it's just so silly and so ridiculous. You basically are a spy, and you do a few missions, and there's a lot, like, when you start a mission, the game just drops you in a place, and you can walk around the place, and there's loads of weird kind of people that will talk to you. Like, there's a robot that you talk to it a couple of times, and it just collapses and says, oh, you broke me, or something. And there's this, like, weirdness, like, you get given a degausser gun, and you have to shoot pigeons with it, and the pigeons you shoot with it, they drop, like, a bottle of perfume, and then when you shoot people with the perfume, the pigeons, like, a mass of pigeons could come and abduct the person. It's very strange. So if you kind of like oddball humor, then I would give Jazz Punk a look, and whatever you do, do what the game tells you to do. Do the main objectives last in an area, because you're missing everything that the game that makes up the game otherwise. What else have I played? I haven't played it, but I bought Virtue's Last Reward on the eShop because it was half price, and I was watching a Let's Play of it, so I thought, you know what, I'll just buy it, you know.
Save yourself the trouble.
Well, I plan on going through it at some point. I'm kind of miffed that there's no English dub in the European version of the game.
Didn't really bother me.
I don't know. I don't have a problem with the English dub like most people do. I think the text flows from playing the demo. I think the text flows makes more sense, because it's very slow when it comes to Japanese. Because it lines up with the Japanese dubbing. Yeah, I haven't bought it yet. I haven't played it yet. I will play it at some point. Just not yet.
I really liked it. I played through.
Yeah, I like the story stuff that's going on. Not too fan of the puzzles, because I couldn't get through the puzzle in the demo. So
really?
Yeah, I'm not very like, you have to be thinking out of the box, and I can't do that. So if I get really stuck when I play it, I'll just look through a guide. But the story stuff is really cool from what I've already seen of it.
Oh yeah, it's very interesting.
And I've been looking at getting a copy of 999, but finding a cheap copy is not easy. I don't want to pay I paid 10 quid for Virtue's Last Reward, and I can get a copy of 999 for 15, but that's more than I pay for Virtue's Last Reward, the sequel. You know.
Sometimes you just gotta pull the trigger.
That's the problem with small
niche Japanese games. Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, it's always the best to get into these games right when they're out.
Yeah.
You're most likely not going to make a loss if you later decide on to sell it or something.
I'm probably gonna jump on Zero Escape 3 when that comes out.
Oh, yeah.
I'm definitely as well.
Yeah, I just hope Rising Star licenses the dub this time. Yeah, other than that, I haven't really been playing much.
Okay. Martin?
The only kind of new thing I've been playing is Outlast. Because that was just released on PS4 and also was free on PlayStation Plus. And it's another horror title where you are in some kind of asylum and you can't fight and you try to get through it somehow. I don't want to give away anything story, basically, because
the story is actually kind of interesting in that.
It's interesting, yeah. and fun, so I don't kind of want to tell anyone about it. It's definitely interesting and doesn't really go in the direction you would sometimes expect, I guess. Yeah?
Yeah.
And, yeah, it has some genuine scares. I mean, it relies a bit more on jump scares than, I guess, the first Amnesia does. But I enjoyed it, for example, way more than A Machine for Pigs. Just because the atmosphere in that asylum is just genuinely creepy.
They nailed the atmosphere.
And,
so much.
And like the first Amnesia, they know that not seeing things is what makes everything even more scary. So just like the first Amnesia where you had to get oil for your lamp, you now have to get batteries for your camcorder so you can actually use the night vision. And it becomes this... You kind of try to ration not to use the night vision too much. So you have battery left in important situations and stuff like that. But of course you want to see so you don't run into the arms of some crazy person running around trying to kill you. And yeah, it's really good. Not that long. I think it was like 3 or 4 hours for me. But yeah, if you have PlayStation Plus, I see no reason not to download it. It's really good. And I'm already looking forward to the DLC, which they have confirmed will also come to PS4.
DLC for that?
Yeah, Whistleblower, damn. Where you play the guy who actually gave... you play a reporter in the game who got a tip from someone on the inside of the asylum, and yeah, the Whistleblower DLC, you play the guy who gave the tip to you in the main game.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Can't wait for that.
Yeah. And that's basically it for me. I didn't play anything else.
I think Outlast is definitely the new benchmark for horror games. If you haven't played Outlast and you haven't and you plan on making a horror game, fix that, because Outlast is the game to beat at this rate in everything, because it's got the visuals.
There is
as well.
Some interesting horror stuff coming out still this year. One of the titles I'm most looking forward to is definitely Daylight. That's the Unreal Engine 4 title.
Oh, yeah.
That is procedurally generated, so no matter.
That's the zombie game, isn't it? The what's it?
Yeah, zombie game.
That IGN woman is writing.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah,
that's the one. I think that game looks really interesting. Because it's procedurally generated, it's a horror game that actually has good replay value, because every time you go through it, the levels have different layout, and that kind of makes a horror game, that you don't know what's around the next corner, and so that seems really interesting to me. So yeah, but there's still a lot of other great horror stuff coming out, especially from indies this year, so should be a good year.
Okay. So that's that, which brings us to news, and there was plenty of news this week. There were two main stories, and I want to kick it off with the big one that has kind of been developing all weekend, the Flappy Bird saga.
Oh, saga is the appropriate appropriate word to use.
As long as Candy Crush Saga people don't sue us for using it.
I actually have to say, I basically didn't follow the whole thing. I just heard for some reason, what I've seen on Twitter, for some reason this game got popular, I don't know why, I looked into it, looked crappy, I didn't even have any interest in trying it out.
So,
and for some reason the whole thing blew up in some way.
Flappy Bird kind of started in the best way it could, where a guy made a game in a week that included some questionable artwork, and apparently, this is only speculation because people can't prove it at this point, apparently it was botted to the top of the one of the app stores, be it the iOS or the Android one. So the game gets botted, apparently, to the top of the app store, and obviously as something becomes more popular within the sort of casual area, like, people start to take notice of it in the hardcore area, and eventually Flappy Birds has at least 10 million downloads on the Android marketplace, which is a gigantic amount of downloads, right? And then Kotaku notices the questionable artwork, where... So the game is about... You play as a bird who tries to fly, but is not very good at it, and if you don't keep flapping, you fall. And...
Oh, Flappy Bird, I get it.
Yeah, Flappy Bird. And the questionable artwork is the obstacles you have to avoid, where there are what looks like the Mario warp pipes coming out the top and the bottom of the screen, and you have to avoid them, otherwise you hit it, you die. And... one particular writer from Kotaku just went out and claimed that the sprites were stolen. Where, and then they provided a comparison, and then they decided to sort of go a little bit overboard, if you ask me, and claim that oh, the bird is just a fucking cheap with some wings attached to it, you know? And it was getting a bit ridiculous, and... as the internet does, the internet likes to pile on a controversy, and that's exactly what happened. The guy got completely harassed, and he said that, you know, this was as it was announced that the game could potentially be making $50,000 a day, which for Vietnamese developer is a huge amount of money.
I was also going to point out that it wasn't necessarily just that he was being harassed for. As we earn after, I guess when Daniel continues his story, it's because he also got harassed from the other side once the thing that happened this weekend took place. But continue.
Yeah, so he was getting harassed for supposedly having stolen artwork and being supposedly everything that is wrong with the mobile game market, and according to a particular writer of Kotaku, literally Hitler. well, that's the way he acted, and... So he's basically said on Twitter that he could class his game a success, but he hates it because it's ruined his life, and he doesn't know if he can't cope with the attention. So then he announced that he was pulling the game, and he gave 22 hours notice, and then people piled on him even more, because God forbid somebody not want to be part of an industry if they can't cope with all the attention it's giving them. Which ended up, ironically, making it complete, like, 10 times worse. And people offered death threats over Twitter, as they do. And I think the problem with this whole thing is it was revealed today, thanks to the Wall Street Journal, that Nintendo had internally discussed Flappy Bird, and they were fine with it. So... a writer at Kotaku made a big, massive shitstorm over the supposedly stolen artwork in the game when a massive mega corporation in Japan, a massive international mega corporation like Nintendo, we're fine with it. They're fine. It's just ridiculous how, you know, I would have taken the game down if I was in that guy's position. You know, if you've got the writer for the biggest games website on the planet, you know, telling you that you are a fraud and that you have stolen somebody else's work and that you can't be allowed to have this game up. He wasn't even selling it. Like, he was making money out of adverts, so he wasn't, if anything, he was monetizing the use of the app instead of the app itself. And you know, it's just ridiculous that Nintendo says it's okay, but a Kotaku writer basically acts as if we've got Hitler incarnate and the internet piles on him like this.
Well, again, I also think a lot of it, because like you said, a lot of it came after he took it down as well. It And it's I mean, we see in this stuff with Phil Fish as well. This is a very negative industry that will pile on and, you know, beat you up. And then they get upset when you decide that you don't want to take it. And they're like, you know what, you should be mad enough. You know what, it comes to the territory. No, it doesn't. People don't need to be harassed at that job if he doesn't want to take
it. And then this is the thing. This is the thing, is people have accused Flappy Bird of being a clone of some other game that was on the App Store a couple of years ago. They've accused it of being a clone of some helicopter game that was on a web, God, like 10 years ago. They've accused the game of having stolen assets from Nintendo. But I don't think that any of that matters. Like, you call the guy out on it, but you don't harass him. It doesn't matter whether the game sucks or not. I hate Flappy Bird. I don't think it's a good example of game design, and I do think it's most things that are wrong with the mobile game industry. But I don't... The guy didn't deserve any of that. It's as simple as that. He's a human being.
Exactly. And, you know, it wasn't like... Again, I don't know. It wasn't him who was like, oh yeah, get this game and give me money. It was something that was kind of virally taken over because, you know, like the broad strokes of it, a lot of people have problems with the Mario artwork, but it's a very tough game, and not tough in a good way. The hitbox for that fish is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You breathe on it and it goes down. So to a lot of people, it became this challenge as to, oh, I'm going to get a high score than my friends. Oh, you get me. I broke double digits and stuff like that. And it kind of took over that way. So a lot of it wasn't his doing. It was, I think there was an article out this week. It said Flappy Bird shows that the App Store, there's no market for the App Store. You don't know what people want. What becomes a hit, you have no idea. Because this game was released last year, and it became a hit just in these past 2 or 3 weeks. And that was because somebody found it, somebody told somebody else about it, and it gets kind of blown up. And just as quickly as it came, it's out of our lives. But, the story continues because now he's getting death threats for taking the game down because people are upset with him. And then there are people who are trying to turn a profit off of it. I don't know if these are actually selling, but I know people are putting up big iPhones.
Well, even if these iPhones don't sell, people are already making clones en masse because that's what happens with mobile games.
Yeah. They're
and those clones are going to have IAPs. Because it's the mobile industry.
Yeah, I already saw one that has an IEP. I think it's like $3.99 or something like that.
Well, there we go. You know?
But from what I've seen, it's like a lot of those games, I mean, they'll make money because people are looking for it and people probably don't pay attention. Oh, it's that Flappy game. Yeah, this is the one that looks like that. And then, you know, they don't, but they all kind of fizzle out. I was talking about, you know, just kind of with this whole Flappy Bird thing, like last year or the year before, I guess, was Draw Something. That was a huge hit for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, and then Zynga bought it just when it was at its height, and then everybody stopped immediately.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's not even a fickle market. It's just a market that doesn't care. Like, you don't, I mean, the only one that has preserved has been Angry Birds.
Yeah.
And that's because it's been able to find success outside of, like, Angry Birds has, what, 3 games now? 4 games, I guess?
There's 5, I think. There's one season, Rio, Star Wars, and Space.
I think part of its success is also that they release another one to keep things...
Yeah.
I mean, in let's say... How would you say?
Keep it in the zeitgeist.
Yeah, keep them in the zeitgeist, yeah, I guess.
But yeah, it's one of those things where there's just a lot of games that kind of come and go, and there's really I think the biggest problem is like, and we've said this before, the biggest problem is always just kind of trying to discover stuff, and even then, people don't necessarily want good games as Flappy Bird proves. They want games that are simple. I mean, Flappy Bird is really just tapping your phone to make this thing go up and down through pipes. There's nothing else to it.
And I did say that if you're mourning Flappy Birds, just go and buy Super Hexagon, because it's the same game, just it's good. It's got design to it.
Or Paper Plane, I think, is the one people were talking about, which is an older one. Or there was Helicopter. There's a lot of games like this. But, I mean, that's always been a criticism of the app, because, you know, people said Angry Birds was like a game that you could play on Newsground ages ago and stuff like that. So, you know, it is what it is. But it's, I mean, more than the game and more than condemning the App Store or anything like that, it really was just another story of how this industry can be so negative and beat you down and then kind of play the victim when you decide that you don't want to be a part of it anymore. And I know that's a gross overgeneralization, but it is what happened. I mean, it's not the first time we've seen it.
No. And this, the thing is the writer at Kotaku, he wrote the article claiming that the assets are stolen, and then he claimed several times on Twitter that if you play Flappy Bird, you're supporting theft. You know, as if you're like, as if you're literally Hitler because you downloaded it now. And then he apologized in the most meaningless way, as if like just putting a post on Twitter is going to solve the mental effects of a human being that has been harassed, you know, like Doug, Dong Nguyen. And it's just a shame that, like, is everybody so blasé about it all the time. And it's a problem that needs to be addressed, and it's one of those problems. How do you address it?
Yeah, you can't.
You can't.
Because nobody thinks it's a problem. And, you know, I've said it before, I'm always for fans having a voice, but you know, your voice is to say, okay, you know, this is how you fix Flappy Bird. You know, kind of shrink the hit detection, make the bird's, you know, box smaller and stuff like that. That is something you can voice. That is a, you know, a legitimate criticism, something that they should hear. I mean, it may not be what they want to hear because, you know, Flappy Bird works because of that hit detection, because it makes it really difficult. But saying that I'm gonna kill you for making this game, I'm gonna shoot you because you took it down, not creative, not criticism. It's just terrible threat, and this is kind of the feedback that you get out of the Times. Like I said, I mean, Phil Fisher's the big one, but he isn't the first person to leave the industry because they didn't take the pressures. You've had a lot of anonymous developers kind of come up and speak recently about that as well. They get death threats. They're told they're awful at their jobs and stuff like that.
And we have people that haven't quit. People like Mike Bithell, who, by the way, I think is the nicest person alive right now. I think. You know, he says it will happen. People will find your, they won't just do it online. They will find your phone number. They will find your address, and they will call you. You know, and it's just ridiculous, like the extent to which this happens. I can't believe it. Like, even if you make something like as innocent as Thomas Was Alone or Flappy Birds, people are going to hate you for putting the game up. And then you think, okay, well, people don't want my game there, so I'll take it down, and they hate you for taking it down.
Yeah, it's a weird story, but I mean, yeah, now nobody. And the funny thing is, everybody was complaining about Flappy Birds, and now it's like they're complaining because, oh, and the other thing is, oh, he's making $50,000 a day. He should be happy with whatever. Like, maybe he wanted the money without being harassed. And you know.
Well, yeah, there are people out there. Are lots of people in this world for which money does not buy happiness. You know, it doesn't matter how much money you'd earn, if you're being harassed like that, you can't just leave it.
Yeah.
It's just, like, you can't make excuses. You shouldn't make excuses for any of this.
So, yeah, I guess moving on, because there's really no way to end that story. Sonic Boom would have been the other major news story of this past week.
SEO nightmare, as I call it. Search engine optimization is what you have to do when you have like a website or a product or something. You have to make sure that people can find it on Google. But if you type in Sonic Boom, what do you think you're going to get into the game?
The song.
Well, you'd either get the song or you'd get the whole concept of a Sonic Boom.
Or yeah, the Street Fighter thing. I mean, Sonic Boom's a very broad term, but yeah, you get the sound of the sound first, which makes sense. Yeah, it's an interesting name. I don't know why they're going with it or going back to it, because like Martin said, it is a song that is highly associated with the Sonic brand. Mm. And
it's one of those embarrassing songs that never should have been
whoa,
made.
Whoa, 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 whoa,
whoa,
whoa, whoa. You did not just say that.
But people like it.
People love it. Sonic Boom is awesome.
I love Supersonic Racing.
No one likes Supersonic
Racing. I like Supersonic Racing. Screw you.
Shut up.
Anyhow, this isn't a discussion about which Sonic song is best, because Sonic Boom wins easily. But it's Sega's, I guess, new cross-media plan for the Sonic brand. There's a video game, a CG cartoon series, toys, and a bunch of other stuff that's coming along with this. And I will say this much. On paper, fantastic idea, I think. I believe this would be something like the sixth Sonic TV show, but it's the first one that's been heavily tied into the games. Like, the Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog was related to the games, but it came out after the games and it was really weird. And Tony, it was very different. And Sonic X was based on the Sonic Adventure games, but that came out like 5 years after Sonic Adventure 2. So this is the first time where they're like, okay, we're going to have a TV show, we're going to have a game, we're going to kind of mount them, they're all going to come out at the same time. I believe, and this is really kind of interesting, the game works as a prequel for the TV show.
That's kind of cool.
It's kind of cool. It's really also kind of weird, because you would think that you would use the TV show to sell the game, not necessarily the game to sell the TV show.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, no, they would probably advertise the game in the TV show by saying, if you want to see what happened before this, buy the game, you know? I don't know, it's kind of weird, I guess. But that's not why Sonic Boom is a real news story.
Well, I mean, it is why it's a real news story, but the real news story was it's a reboot of the franchise, which meant that a lot of the characters kind of got redesigned. Which meant that some of them have questionable new looks.
You say some of them, don't you mean everybody but Tails?
Well, Amy looks fine as well, I think.
And Amy, I think the problem people have with Amy is that she's kind of been sexed up a bit.
Yeah, and she pulls weird facial expressions.
I haven't looked that much into it, but okay.
Yeah, but the, I guess the big one, no pun intended, was Knuckles' redesign.
Who is no roided up freak?
And I know Sonic hasn't been Sonic has never had kind of a realistic proportion system in the way they designed their characters anyway, but his head is way too small, I think. He just looks very strange.
He looks like a roid freak.
Yeah. So yeah, Knuckles is not as tall. He's taller than everyone now. He's like Tails' head goes up to Knuckles' crotch, which is that's also another thing that I noticed. It's kind of strange. And he's really
funny. The things you notice.
Really beefed up for some reason, and it's just weird. Like if he's gonna have the same kind of voice, then that will not work. He needs to have a deeper voice if he's going to look like that. I don't understand what the bandages is all about.
I don't.
Yeah, that's the other thing. There are too many bandages on
and
all
Sonic
of them.
And Sonic has them on around his shoes as well.
I mean, that kind of makes sense if you are in sports, I guess. It makes sense, but not in the way they designed it. Also, he has, like, random bandages around the middle of his hand, which would technically do nothing. I don't get it.
I don't get it either. And it's apparently he skipped the X day. This is weird with his design. And I would feel terrible if Sega did not make a sports game using this design. Anything, really, with those designs. But, yeah, And it's weird because a lot of them, like Sonic doesn't look that bad in motion. I think when you see Sonic in stills, it looks awful because his exact body proportion is just really off.
Yeah.
But in motion, it looks fine. But
I'm also not a big fan that they made his arms blue.
People said, I don't remember what color Sonic's arms are.
They were beige.
Yeah, they're beige.
They're the same as like eyelids were. Yeah, his belly.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I wasn't paying attention to that. I just know a lot of people said it was blue. So,
which kind of makes more sense, because if you look at a hedgehog, the back is different from the bottom of it. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, let's be honest, I don't know how much Sonic is actually based off a hedgehog these days. Or ever, really.
Not at all, as evident.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, there's really nothing else. I mean, the designs are there. The game is, I guess, in this, it's the final of Nintendo's three Sonic exclusive titles. It's due out later this year. It's a reboot of the franchise, so it looks like it's kind of returning to that. It looks like it's doing a weird co-op thing. Where
it runs on CryEngine, even.
Here's another weird thing, is, like, haven't you noticed that Sega seems to be rebooting the franchise with every fucking game they make now? Like, we had Sonic Generations, which was, okay, the Sonic games have been shit lately, let's make a good one. And it turned out pretty well. And then we had Sonic 4 Episode 2, which was obviously the latter half of Sonic 4, and that turned out to be really crap. And then we had Sonic Lost World, which is, let's take Sonic and make it so he can do parkour, and he's on Mario Galaxy type levels. Like, what? You know, and now we've got this, which is completely different in art style and gameplay.
I think Jim Sterling said it best. It's like, Sega hasn't given a chance for any of these ideas to kind of develop.
They're continuing to not do that.
Yeah,
they continue to do that, which is ridiculous.
By all accounts, Generations was a pretty good game.
Yeah.
But instead of building on it,
they changed it completely.
They changed it again.
Yeah.
Why?
And that's what I mean. Even Colors, I thought, was a great foundation, and Generations kind of built on that. And then they just ditched that design for Elseworld. And the Generations design for Sonic Boom. At the same time, you know, they did hint at the fact that Sonic Team may be working on a separate Sonic game. So
yeah,
maybe,
but that's probably going to be another different thing again.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe this time he turns into a giraffe. I don't know.
A couple of things about the coin, it being on CryEngine, is A, I don't know if you found this, but I found a website that pointed out that we've known about Sonic Boom, the game, for a while, because it was in a Crytek demo video last year. Just obviously it wasn't named then, which is kind of interesting. I reckon a lot of people are like, I've seen a couple of people ask why it's not on Hedgehog. I honestly think that because Hedgehog is Sonic Team proprietary engine, I think... all the documentation's in Japanese, so that's why.
Most likely.
That's why it's on CryEngine, because they're not gonna be able to translate the documentation.
It is
for the game.
It is weird to think about Sonic being built on the CryEngine, though. But
yeah.
I mean, on the bright side, even though I really don't think this is going to help much, it does benefit Nintendo to actually have somebody say, "Yo, this engine works on this console."
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, we have known that it works on the console.
Yeah, we've known it works, but nobody's used it, so it's nice to see. If Nintendo can nice is out and say, here's a working version of it if you want to port your game over.
It's one less excuse for developers. They can't say, we can't get CryEngine on Wii U when we can.
It's not going to help, though.
Yeah, it's going to help, but it's a nice thing to have.
If anything, Nintendo needs for companies to have less excuses.
Yeah.
I mean, but as long as they continue to have the big one that your console's not selling, it really
doesn't
matter.
Yeah.
I guess, and the other thing, and this will be, is that this is not a relatively new studio. They've been around for 5 years or so.
It'll be their first game.
Yeah, this is their first game, and it's made up of ex-Naughty Dog.
So they would have been working for a while now?
It's been 2 years from, they said, so about 2.5 years, 3 years.
Hang on, you say they're ex-Naughty Dog. Can I just sort of go off topic for a little bit?
Okay.
Why does people keep bringing this up as a good thing? Like, they worked in a company that employs 500 people.
Yep.
You know, that's not to say that they have good pedigree.
But well, also, they're most likely not the important guys, because those are still a Naughty Dog, as far as I know.
Ex-Ubisoft. Ubisoft has one company that employs 2,500 people, you know?
Well, I think people say it because it does give them pedigree. Like, you know, like, when you say these are former Naughty Dog people, you can say, oh, at least I know.
He could have been the guy that's could have made the T for Naughty Dog, you know?
I get your point, but I'm just saying people bring that up. It's the same way that you kind of say Respawn are the people behind Call of Duty and stuff like that.
Yeah, but those were the important guys.
Those were
a lot of people.
Okay, but my point is that you say that because it builds pedigree. It's the same way that movies say from the producers of, when producers do nothing, but it gives you some type of like quality. You know, like, oh, these are Naughty Dog, so they make good games, so you expect good things from them. I'm not saying that it's going...
I don't expect anything from Respawn Studios.
You may not, but if you're, like, a casual consumer and you just hear, like, from the people...
Oh, yeah, they pay very much attention to that is ex-Naughty Dog guys.
Well,
sure.
this is how it's being presented. I'm not the one saying, like, yeah, Naughty Dog people, because let's be honest, Naughty Dog also made Uncharted 3. So, even though I believe these were people who left kind of at before the boom of like the PlayStation 3 stuff, so a lot of it would have been, I guess, the Jak and Daxter stuff.
I think the producers and directors of those games are still around.
I didn't say these were. If anything, they would have been part of that team because if it's 5 years, it would have been before Uncharted 2 came out. So
yeah.
So it is that. What else do we have in news this week?
One more thing. Another interesting part is the 3DS title that. It's made by the guys who made the last, what's it called again?
Sly Cooper, I just said that.
Sly Cooper, yeah. you broke up for me, that's
okay.
Why.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was Sly Cooper guys, which I thought is interesting. I think the game was decent.
Yeah, I've heard good things about it. I mean, it sucks for Sly Cooper fans apparently, but...
Yeah. I don't know.
They're in the movie.
And I think...
Have you seen the heavy story?
Really well.
Yeah, I'm not really in any...
I saw the trailer. I didn't even chuckle or anything. I didn't think it was particularly funny. The animation was fine. I didn't much care for any of the designs. I guess the turtle guy was right. I forget his name. But the other designs are kind of... Eh.
Yeah. Okay. So there's that. I guess since we're talking about studios being put on games, we might as well talk about the newest member of the Call of Duty team, Sledgehammer Games, who have worked on Call of Duty in the...
Well, they are not that new.
Well, I mean new in the fact that they're going to get their own mainline Call of Duty games now.
Yeah, they need to assign all these people to do something. You know, you can't have 6-7 studios on Call of Duty and have one of them do nothing, you know.
Well,
it just annoys me because...
studios on one franchise.
It annoys me because, what is it, like, everybody already has, like, oh, I'm going to skip the Infinity Ward title because the Infinity Ward one sucked. Activision needs people buying the games every year, not, oh, I'm going to skip it for 2 years in a row because it's not made by Treyarch, you know?
Well, we don't know yet how good the Sledgehammer game is going to be.
No, we don't, but I think what it's going to do is just going to further this... like, duality that people have started forming of, oh, I'm going to skip the Infinity Ward game because they've been pretty crappy lately, you know, and I'm going to get the Treyarch one because they tend to take more risks and they tend to balance the game better, you know.
I think the people who are of that opinion are in so low numbers that it doesn't really affect Activision's bottom line.
Really? Because we've had what is probably the most divisive Call of Duty title this year.
Oh, yeah, but it still sold lots.
Well, it didn't. Not compared to other Call of Duties, though. Like,
what
Call of Duty is on
the numbers.
It's on a decline. It sold less than Black Ops 2, which sold less than Black Ops 1, I think.
Well, I
Black
don't
Ops 2
know
sold less than Modern Warfare 3,
the reason
and Ghost sold less than Black Ops 2.
I'm not sure if the reason is that it's being made by Infinity Ward 4. I think it's a pretty shitty game, but... maybe Call of Duty is slowly on the way out.
And what I'm saying is if that is the case, the last thing Activision needs is for there to be more division over what games are good and what aren't not. You know? Yeah. And I reckon this is just going to cause even more of that. So I think Sledgehammer really needs to pull something really big out of the bag. They can't just make a Call of Duty game and expect to succeed with it, because that's not going to happen.
I've been wondering how long they would have been working on this for now, but this game would probably not have been in the pipe for 3 years, because they helped out on Modern Warfare 3, so I guess this game is probably in the pipe for 2 years. I would assume.
Unless Treyarch is next, and then Sledgehammer goes.
No. Sledgehammer is definitely this year.
Is it?
Sledgehammer is this year. It's just very weird that we're talking about this now. Like, okay, who's up next for Call of Duty? Is it going to be...
This is it, right? Is there are so many fucking studios working on it now. It's just ridiculous. We've got, Raven, which is a waste of talent working on the DLC.
Yep.
And we've got some other studio working on some other thing that we don't even know.
Neversoft is working on something.
Yeah, what is Neversoft doing? And there's another studio that's not Neversoft.
They made maps for Black Ops 2 as well.
I honestly think it's a terrible idea to put all your eggs into this basket, because, I mean, we already saw last year with it's not a sharp decline, but it did decline year over year, has been for the last 3 years. So if you have this far off and you're investing half of your manpower into creating this franchise alive, if it does, you know, if it, let's say, drops down to like 10 million, that's it out of the sales and revenue, and then you have all your resources tied up into it. And I think the other problem is like, say this one comes out and it does remarkably well, is that people won't get a sequel for it for 3 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a really odd system.
On the other hand, I think that 3 years is probably going to benefit the individual game to have more time to work on them.
Yeah, it will.
I mean, it really showed that Infinity Ward did not have enough time with Ghosts.
Yeah, it's a weird setup. I really wish they would diversify more.
Yeah,
but then diversification is not what Call of Duty is about. So,
well, I don't mean Call of Duty. I mean making stuff other than Call of Duty.
They make Skylanders, and they put all their other resources into that. So, you know.
And the other thing they are trying to do now is build up Destiny. And if Destiny will be great and successful, then that's going to be the next Call of Duty.
Well, I definitely hope not.
Well,
because I'm looking
at like what Activision.
Well, yeah, of course, because that's the way Activision operates, which is really sad. Because Bungie is a fantastic team, and they're my favorite developer of everyone out there, and I would hate to see them work like a fucking horse.
But as far as I'm aware, Bungie owns Destiny.
They do.
Part of Activision, so it's probably not going to turn out that way.
You know, the last thing I want out of anything Bungie ever does is for another Halo 2.
Yeah.
So. And which, by the way, was my least favorite Halo, because it was shit.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah.
Okay. What else do we... this has been a fun story to kind of watch. Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes has gone from a... I believe it started the week at a 4-hour demo, which got cut down to about 2 hours, and by the end of the week it was about 90 minutes.
Yeah.
To play through the
90 minutes to finish the main mission, including cutscenes.
The game's not out yet, and we're already speedrunning it. What?
And
no, they're not speedrunning
it.
No, I know, but it's just like, it just feels like it, you know?
Are going to finish it in 5 minutes.
Okay, that part I don't mind. It's just that this whole... And again, the problem isn't that it's 90 minutes. I mean, that is part of the problem. It's that it's 90 minutes and they're asking $40 for it.
Yep.
If it was like 90 minutes and they were asking $10 for it...
Oh, you think that's bad? They're asking 40 quid, which is $60.
Yeah,
yep.
If we
get to pay more just because we're on the other side of an ocean.
Well, you don't have to buy it, which a lot of people seem to be saying now.
You know how much I love Metal Gear Solid. When this thing was announced, I was already speculating what all the trailer tidbits could mean. And I'm not going to buy this. It's way too expensive.
Now you know all the trailer tidbits was the full game. But because I've seen a lot of people, you know, make comparisons to games like Gone Home or Don't Starve, which are also 90.
I thought Gone Home was overpriced.
But still, even then, they're asking you, what, $10 at most?
No, Gone Home was $20.
Oh, okay, so...
Which, I mean, had they reduced that to $15, I would have been fine with the price.
Yeah.
$15 is a perfect price for Gone Home.
The real bummer was when the Konami dude came out and was like, well, what, there are games like Journey, which are about as long. Yeah, but...
Journey's not $40.
Costs 15.
Yeah.
And the other...
And Journey's not mostly cutscene either.
Yeah.
The other defense was that you can go back and have side missions and complete it different ways. But for a lot of people, it's usually a one-and-done ordeal.
Yeah.
So that's not even a... I mean, again, that's going to be for some people, but you can say that about any game. I can say that Call of Duty is a 1,000-hour game because people play multiplayer on it. That doesn't necessarily make it true.
I mean, if this game had multiplayer like Metal Gear Online, I would probably be way more tolerable towards it because
I actually
enjoyed playing Metal Gear Online. I would probably spend more time with this game.
Yeah, I think if it had more content in general, I don't think people would have complained. But right now, they're asking way too much for Sony.
I mean, at this point, why don't you just fucking put it in the main game?
Well, I know.
But, like that much content is just a mission that should be in the game, you know?
Well, I said it before. I like the idea of kind of this pre-release kind of content. It makes sense. But yeah, it should be priced accordingly.
What was it? K-Zero for Dead Rising 2. That was $400. Yeah, that was great. I bought that and never bought Dead Rising 2 because you know, I like killing the fucking zombies, you know, and I wasn't going to buy Dead Rising 2 to do that. But it's $5. I'll do that.
Yeah, see, that's great. I mean, yes, it's cheap because it is really a fanciful demo, which we used to get for free. But at the same time, it's a great way, you know, it's a way to kind of make money if you're kind of broke. It's to offer gamers or consumers a nice little piece of your game while you're working on it. That's a decent chunk that can be kind of cut out or maybe an extended prologue as this is. And you give it to them for a reasonable price and it builds anticipation. This doesn't really do any of that. This just seems like a money grab. It's like, okay, we're going to snake $40 out of you because we need the money to kind of finish developing this game. So we're just going to give this to you now.
Well, yeah, the problem is that Konami doesn't have much going for them these days.
No.
They have basically Metal Gear.
I'm surprised they can afford to make something like Metal Gear.
And Pro Evolution Soccer.
Yeah.
That's what they have going for themselves. Pro Evolution Soccer isn't doing the numbers it used to do. And Metal Gear takes forever to do, apparently. So,
and this
now
is
going to
be Hideo's last Metal Gear Solid. So they've got to pull up their socks.
Oh, yeah, his Metal Gear Solid. He's been saying that since, what, 2?
Well, exactly.
I don't know if they have the money to continue making Metal Gear games. I think that's why they continue to make Metal Gear games, is because it's the only thing that's keeping them afloat. But, you know, like, how do you, like, they can't break it. They don't have any other mega franchises. It's not like other companies who are sitting on stuff. Like, you know, people will probably say Zone of the Enders, but that's not a huge franchise.
When was the last time they released a Zone of the Enders game that wasn't a remake?
Well, that was my point. It's like, they don't have, like, this, you know, like, you could say that with Sega, who's sitting on a ton of stuff, Capcom's who's sitting on a bunch of stuff, Nintendo, Sony.
Yeah, but Sega and Capcom make other games regularly.
Well, I would say Sega isn't as much. I was just using examples that came to mind. But Konami, it's like, what do they have? Like, what else do they have? I guess they have Castlevania, but
but how many people like Lords of Shadow? Like, genuinely.
But and then that's what I mean.
I like the first one.
And I think the 2D handheld ones don't sell as well as they would like either. And I would imagine those would be cheaper to make. But, you know, they tried that with Mercury Stream with the 3DS one, and that didn't sell too hot. And I don't know. I haven't heard anything about the HD version, but I imagine that's not lighting the world on fire.
it was a bad game, so...
Yeah.
Because what was it? The game that they made where you can't die, where your limbs come off and shit. That was
Never Dead.
Yeah.
Another shit title. I mean, I don't know what Konami is doing. They had some really amazing franchises that they just didn't care that, like, to do anything with.
And, back on the NES, it was Konami and Capcom and Nintendo, and they were powerhouses.
On PS1, Konami was also on fire. Yeah. Even on PS2, they were still really good. I mean, they had Metal Gear. They had Pro Evolution, which was at the top. And they had Silent Hill, which was amazing at the time. And now?
yeah. Okay, what else do we have? Amazon buys Double Helix.
Oh, that was a weird... That's. I woke up and I was... Like, the first thing I did that day was check Twitter and I saw the news and I was like, am I hallucinating? Is this actually happening?
It's a weird one. I mean, Double Helix isn't like the most prolific studio out there that you would especially want to buy, I guess.
Yeah, but that works in Amazon's favor.
And they probably got them for cheap, and as far as I'm aware, they're like close to the other studio. I guess that was probably one of the reasons they got them. I mean, Killer Instinct is good, but
not much
otherwise.
Else.
Yeah, it's a weird setup because I mean I guess I don't know to find it. But I would have almost imagined it would probably be easier for them to have created their own studio. Instead of, like, buying this studio, because you don't necessarily know you're going to keep all the manpower that comes with it, and you don't get any IPs because they haven't worked on it.
I would think that Amazon was after... Amazon, Double Helix, despite them not being, like, the best developer in the world, they at least know how to ship a console title, and I think that's what Amazon's after.
Yeah, but
they
I
would
guess...
want to know how consoles work and what they do well and what they don't do well and why you would make a game for one.
I guess my thing would have been that, I guess that I mean that makes a certain level of sense. But as far as I know, like every rumor with this seems to be that it's used in some type of custom design. Like it's based on Android, but it's used in some, you know, like, so it's an environment that they may not be familiar with. Like you can say that they have experience making console games, but if Amazon isn't going in the traditional console design setup,
well, no, they can apply Amazon can apply the knowledge. Like, there are rumors that Amazon's going to make their own Android console machine thing, right?
Well, I mean, those rumors have to be pretty shows. If they find a game studio.
I think, it's just the pure knowledge of how to develop a game on a system and what they would need to, like, to make a game that has multiplayer and stuff, you know? Like, and this is the problem that Nintendo had, and because they didn't listen to the fucking developers that they had, is the Wii U's online infrastructure ended up being subpar because they didn't listen to what people wanted. So they buy a developer that's already made and shipped a whole bunch of console titles that know what they need and what they want to get the job done, and then they say to Amazon, this is what we need, and Amazon's like, okay, well, we'll build this into the infrastructure of the console that we're making.
See, again,
thing that makes the most sense. I can't see why...
I would be curious because if the rumors are true, like this console has been in development and should be out this year, it seems really aiding the games to kind of bring them on board for that part of it.
Yeah, well, Amazon's a company that has, they can just delay things when, like, inevitably because they don't have any market pressure to release it now. So they could do whatever they want with this, with their hardware designs. They could upend it, you know?
I guess.
There's no pressure.
We'll see. The biggest takeaway, I guess, was for a lot of people, it just seems like an odd developer to purchase because they aren't really well known for... I mean, before Killer Instinct, they weren't really known for quality games.
At all.
Good things, I mean...
I think it's a good opportunity for them to turn it around, though.
Yeah, I mean...
They have a company with seemingly infinite money.
But they had Microsoft before, so I mean...
Yeah, and that's what they managed to make Killer Instinct with Microsoft, so...
I'm curious if we're going to hear more about any other game acquisition games to do acquisitions from them.
There may not be any. Maybe they just wanted the one for now.
They haven't they been building a studio on by themselves?
Yeah,
I
but
think they have.
But, and that's what I was saying. I think it makes more sense to build a studio. But if we, like, maybe they'll get, like, you know, like, how many studios can they fit? Like, how many people is that? And is it people who have experience with mostly Android gaming, you know, mobile and tablets, or is it going to be people with console backgrounds? It's curious. Like, I'm really curious to see how this unfolds. I'm intrigued by this prospect, if nothing else.
Although nothing would put me off more if they just release a fucking Android console that's
I don't see one of these really taking off.
I don't see what the market is, to be honest.
Yeah.
I guess the market.
But there must be one because we've got a fucking Mad Catz one. We've got the Ouya. We've got the Game Stick. We've got.
Well, there might be a market, but how big is it?
Yeah, I think the market is what people
that's
have.
That's the issue there.
I mean, the market, I assume, would be what Nintendo got with the Wii, but the idea is, will they buy a console again, and what type of experience is it?
Well, the thing is, though, the difference is, though, with the Wii, when the Wii was out, like, there was nothing that these kind of casual people could play games on, whereas now I could buy an iPad, I could buy a Nexus 7,
and
it's got a screen in it.
And that's going to be...
And they're cheaper. Too.
I guess what Amazon's hoping is that people are built into their ecosystem because Amazon can offer, you know, you can offer Amazon Prime, you can offer, you know, like they give out free mobile apps all the time. And if you can build that all into your console, it does give people more than like, oh, it's just a game console. It's also like, yeah, this is the best way to watch Amazon Prime. It gets exclusive content. You know, you get the free shipping on games, maybe some type of bonuses. Yeah. So Amazon has an infrastructure to kind of change the game if they kind of upgrade everything they do and become, you know, because they are a big part of people's lives, especially here, it's easy for them to kind of say, we'll give you these benefits as well if you buy our console. If it takes off, who knows? But it is an intriguing prospect just because Amazon does have such a huge range of products that they kind of offer in that entertainment realm. With like Amazon Prime and, you know, a lot of their own mobile apps and devices. You know, like imagine...
Yeah, they have also the MP3 stuff that they've got as well.
You can, you know, like maybe you could, you know, like, oh, if, I don't know if there's a market for it. I don't really know why, but like, oh, you can read your Kindle books on your TV or stuff like that. Or, you know, just the idea of having everything integrated between like your Kindle, your smartphone, your, you know, your video game console. It's a lot of, you know, it's the same stuff that Microsoft...
And
a lot of stuff that Microsoft...
Yeah, I mean, there could be a... Yeah, I mean, well, Microsoft was trying out e-readers on Xbox now, apparently, so...
Yeah, well, I don't...
It makes more sense for Amazon to do it.
Yeah, so... Yeah, it's a bit more interesting than something like Ouya, because, you know, it's a company that actually has money and probably has an actual game plan. And a business.
Not to mention, Amazon knows how to market their products.
Yes, and they know how to undercut.
True.
They can sell stuff for cheap to get you on board and find some way to make a profit elsewhere. Imagine if a console came out with all the latest games, like $40-$30 or something like that. Or maybe like a PlayStation Plus setup where if you're an Amazon Prime member, you get games at a certain discounted rate every. You know, every game gets, you know, you get off 20% off or something like that. Because, I mean, they already offer great deals on video games. At least for us. I don't know about you folks.
No, not really.
Yeah, because I every holiday season I pay a game I like to call Amazon Rollover, which is like you pre-order a game and it usually comes with $10 credit, then you use that to pre-order the next game for the $10 or $20 credit, and then by the end of it, you end up with like a game and a half for free. And usually you had the decent enough to discount the price anyhow. So yeah, there's that. I guess in terms of Amazon competitors, this is really brief because as Daniel pointed out, this really has a server to do with the whole console industry, but Sony financials came out this week. And, I mean, big picture, Sony is in terrible shape as a company. I think most people who pay attention have known that about Sony for the last half decade or so.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
that the company itself is just in shambles. That said, their video game, the two takeaways from their video game stuff this quarter is that the PlayStation 4 isn't a financial drain on them like the PlayStation 3 was at launch. At the same time, it
which is not shocking.
Which is not shocking. At the same time, it seems like it's a segment of their business that does well, but it doesn't really do much in the grand scheme of things. I mean,
well, that's not really surprising considering it's the same for Microsoft as well.
I'm curious as to how long both of them remain in it if it's not financially viable for them as far as. It's not a growth industry, I guess. It's like it makes money, but it doesn't make enough money for either one of them. Because, I mean, Sony's on track to, by their own estimates, about $1.1 million. Their video game industry for the year is probably, if they're lucky, going to make maybe $100 million, I should say, for the year.
Honestly, I don't think Sony will cut it because they've already got a majority market share in current gen, and you know, at the moment it makes money for them, and they need to keep everything that does make money for them.
Yeah, I guess what I'm, because it's kind of what they're doing with their laptops and their TV. It's not necessary, not necessarily get rid of their gaming division, but maybe not make the hardware and focus more on the software, because that is where most of the video game money comes from. Like, they could kind of have the PlayStation brand set up at the hardware business, kind of go in business with somebody else to partner up with them, and then focus on the software, because that is where, I mean, for all three of them, that's where money comes from, software sales.
Yeah, but I don't think Sony needs to care that much, because they're actually making profit off PS4. Like, if you were to buy a console and not buy any games, that's it, they've made profit on you already.
Yeah.
So.
Right, but Grant, I'm just looking at it from the brand scheme of things. Because, yeah, they're making profit, but if what they make from game is just kind of like throwing a pebble in a pool, it's like, yeah, they make money, but it's not doing anything for their bottom line.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing with Sony is every division they have that makes any kind of profit is like that. Because they're losing so much money.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess the alternate would be, like, their smartphones do extremely well. And their digital cameras, I was surprised, still has a huge market.
That's probably within industry, though, not
individuals,
not consumer market.
Well, either way, it sells more than their hardware division last quarter. Video game industry, I should say, anyhow. So it was just interesting looking at that. It was an idea because they already do kind of expand their software releases. They release games on smartphones and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's an interesting thing. I'm curious to see what PlayStation, and I think PlayStation Now is also kind of a move in that direction where they kind of become more.
Well, PlayStation Now is a good example of software as a service. So
yeah,
and that's going to be $50 a year on top of PS Plus.
Well,
so
we don't know that.
Apparently, it was. Apparently it is going to be. I don't know where I saw that today, but I did see it.
Okay, because that, again, that would go in the PlayStation Plus. I don't know how they make money off of that.
Well, it depends on how much content you get access to, really.
Yeah, but even, I mean,
I don't know why it's such a secret how they're making money off it. A lot of their games are indie titles. You don't have to promise a lot of money to those people.
Yeah, but
they only give money to the companies of these games if a game is downloaded. That's the whole secret about it. If you miss a game and don't download it yourself,
Sony doesn't pay for it. Yeah,
that's why they don't make it automatic in any way.
Yeah, okay.
Sony doesn't have to pay for it.
Okay, in some ways that makes sense. But even still, let's say you pay them, I don't know, like $1 for every download that it gets. I mean, I assume they do more than 50 games a year on the PlayStation Plus service.
I would have to do the math on that.
I mean, even the first year,
it's two a month. It's two a month.
No,
it's like 24.
You get more than two free games a month.
It's four or five a month.
Well, it depends on how many platforms you own. Really?
Well, yeah, but you get them anyhow. Like, you can I've downloaded Vita games. I don't own a Vita, but if I ever get a Vita, I'm going to have
packs of
games. The same way you can download PlayStation 4 games on your PS3.
I think the chances are it's not so much per one copy. It's probably like 1 per 100 or 1 per 1,000, like so much.
Also, from what I've heard, it's for the most part, it's really just games that kind of stop making a lot of money on the usual outlets.
Yeah. Well, this I've seen a lot of companies and put the games in there for promotional purposes.
Even if you see, oh man, BioShock, but BioShock Infinite is a game that probably
doesn't sell at all now.
Most of its money in the first month it came out.
Yeah,
and then it just trickles down to basically nothing.
Yeah, which is a problem we've talked about with this industry in general. But I guess the flip side of that would be like, oh, I won't buy Infamous Second Son because I can probably get it for free on PlayStation.
Has this happened? We have PlayStation Month for Plus for a while now. Has it happened?
What? Will you get major games?
No, where games haven't been bought.
Sales collapse because PlayStation Plus exists.
There are people who wait for games.
But it's not a mass amount of people.
No, it's not a massive amount of people. If you really want to play a game, you're going to buy it. I'm going to buy a game I want to play immediately.
I'm not.
Well, you!
Hold on.
Well, this is it, because pre-orders wouldn't exist otherwise.
Yeah.
Nobody would ever pre-order a game, and pre-orders are... Well, look at Aliens Colonial Marines, you know?
Probably more ridiculous than ever.
Yeah.
I mean, when companies already, like, boast about how many pre-orders they have.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, we shall see.
What was it? Payday 2, that game reached, like, profitability through pre-orders alone. And, you know, I mean, yes, you could say that that's a game that... didn't cost a whole lot of money to make in the grand scheme of things, but that game was released on Steam, and you know, a lot of people say, oh well, I'm not going to buy this game, I'll wait for sale on Steam.
Yeah.
And
it hasn't killed that game, and you also remember Payday 2 was also a game that was developed for multiple platforms. It was for PC, PS3 and Xbox 360,
and it made the most money on PC of all places.
So the game was profitable just through the PC early access thing. Early access, just pre-orders. Pre-orders.
But I'm not asking how these games make money. I'm asking how Sony overall continues to make money off of the service. But, you know, if you say so, I'm just going to go with it. We don't know Sony's exact breakdown on how much they actually make per subscriber. So we're just going to go
with it. What they make per subscriber is probably pure profit.
And I reckon there's also a bidding war that goes on. Like,
you think people pay Sony to give away their game?
No, I mean like where Sony says, oh, like we would give you that much money per copy or whatever, but we've got this other game we could promote instead.
Yeah.
So maybe if you could lower that a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, that's probably what's going on with indie titles.
Well, like I said,
because apparently with indie titles as well, if you looked at like the download charts on like PSN that they put out, even if it's a game you get for free, it will be charted. So it means it's up in the chart. It's the same trick people do on iTunes with apps, for example. They put it out for free for a while, it charts, where it will probably stay for a while, then it's no longer free. People look at the charts, what's popular, and then they buy it later on.
Oh, did we speak about Dungeon Defenders?
You mean Dungeon Keeper?
Dungeon
Whatever.
Keeper. No.
Yes, because your App Store reviews reminded me of that really shady scheme going on. Okay, the entire game is shady, but that review stuff was just really awful.
That's luckily, that's only on
Android.
Software, only on Android.
Yeah.
Because iOS uses its own system that you can just rate stuff on the store directly.
Well, you can do that in Android as well.
Like you can, like if you click on 5, you can go and rate it whatever you want anyhow. But
when I went to rate Dungeon Keeper, because I went to rate Dungeon Keeper on the store and it said you need to install it first, so I installed it, and while my tablet was installing it, I rated it 1 star straight on the website.
Nice!
And then as soon as it was done downloading on my tablet, I uninstalled it.
Yeah, I did the same thing. Dungeon Keeper. They made a new one. It's free to play. It's total garbage.
Oh, as Jim Sterling calls it, which this is a great term, by the way, free to wait.
Yeah. Apparently you can start playing the game, do two actions where they start mining, and that.
Then wait 4 hours.
Wait 4 hours. Or maybe days, depending on what you mine or how much you mine. Amazing. That's, this game has basically nothing to do with the original Dungeon Keeper, where mining out a room was a matter of 30 seconds, maybe. And then you started building, and it was mission-based, and heroes tried to come into your dungeon, and you killed them off. And it was such an amazing game.
Even Peter Molyneux hates the new Dungeon Keeper.
Oh, yeah. He's totally like, oh, I support War for the Overworld, which is this indie title which just straight up ripping off the original Dungeon Keeper, and it looks really good.
Yeah. That's how bad it is, and it, to be honest, I mean, it's just the height of the fucking bullshit monetization techniques on, like, mobiles now. Like,
yeah.
It exemplifies pretty much everything where you do one thing and you wait forever, you know?
Yeah, it's not different from any of these energy-based systems. It's basically the same thing, just instead of presenting you some form of energy that you can use up, it just tells you this takes so long. And that's absolutely the worst kind of free-to-play game.
I just don't understand how anyone could play a game where you spend more time not playing it.
Yeah. I've seen, like, the new Ace Combat game that Namco is doing for PS3, but I think it's now in beta, and they also basically have an energy-based system where you can only do so many missions and stuff per day. And I was like, yeah, I'm never going to play that because of that. What's the point? I can't play when I want to play.
And this is the thing, is I don't know how much money Loadout is making, but it does, like, I hate free-to-play. I fucking hate free-to-play in all incarnations. But I don't mind.
I like good free-to-play.
Like, I can tolerate Loadout. I can tolerate, like, the way Dota 2, if every game could do it like Dota 2 does it, that would be great for me. But I acknowledge that Valve probably lost a lot of money on Dota 2 for a long time before, you know, they made any of it back. So that's not, I don't think that's feasible.
For most companies, at least.
For most companies, because Valve has an unlimited size bank account. You know, if you could just do a free-to-play system like Loadout does, where you have a glacial progression system, but you can still play it and you can still be competitive if it's a multiplayer game, even with it.
And let you play when I want to play.
Yeah, and let you play. The most important thing is, if you want to play it, you can play it. Not you have to wait 3.5 hours. You know, this whole, like, I mean, it's gotten to the point where our government, I don't know how successful this is going to be, our government has even started looking into it and proposing restrictions because it's gotten way out of control. And
I think that's great because some of the games are just straight up evil in the way because they work in the same, they tap into the same kind of psychological weaknesses humans have that gambling does. Sometimes not very different from how they work, and so
it's just,
I think,
straight
it's a good
up
thing
exploitation. It's no game, pure exploitation.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess because we're running along now, one more piece of thing is the Warner Brothers Arkham Origins DLC patch business, which, the long story short, is basically screw you consumers. We want more money from you. Who cares if you can't finish the game?
Yeah, basically the game has some bugs, they need fixing, but instead, we use those resources to make the DLC.
Yeah, and yeah, it's a really bum situation.
Yeah?
Here's what I don't understand, right, is somebody at WB somewhere sat there and thought, nah, this will be okay. Nah, there can't be any bad PR to come with this.
They probably thought, okay, we're going to be honest and upfront with them, and maybe they'll accept that and see that we're just trying to offer. But yeah, it's a really weird thing to say. We're going to sell, we're going to sell you more content, even though you can't finish the one you already paid for.
Yeah.
And that is our focus. And, yeah, it's a really weird thing for a company to come out and say, like, hey, you gotta remind your honesty, but it was a really dumb thing to be honest about. Especially being that they made a note to say that it's bugs that prevent people from making progression in the game. It's not like, oh, sometimes this cape glitches to a throw or something. It's actual game-breaking bugs. But that isn't their priority. Their priority is shipping out more of this DLC. And that is, that's bogus. I mean, that is a huge, huge smack in the face to your consumers, the people who shelled out $50-$60 for your game over the past 4 or 5 months, and you turn around and say, yeah, we didn't ship you a great product. We don't care because we just want your money.
Especially considering up until Arkham Origins, the series has had pretty good reputation on all fronts.
Not anymore.
Well, no, not anymore. But, and you would have thought that because of the initial problems that people had with Arkham Oranges, people keep calling it Arkham Oranges on Twitter, and I've gotten into saying it now. Arkham Origins. The same thing happened with Rayman Origins as well. You'd have thought that because there was initial bout of bad PR based on how buggy the game was to start off with, they would have at least put all their effort into fixing that up before.
And they have released patches, but those haven't done a lot.
Yeah.
So they're just like, you know what, screw it. That's no longer our concern. We're moving into a profitable venture. And it's a damn shame that the people who get screwed over in this are consumers. It's also one of those things, and I could be mistaken, I just haven't seen a lot of people talk about in the gaming media. A lot of it has come from forums and people on Twitter upset, not necessarily websites calling them out on such a... Well, in an anti-consumer movement, really. I mean, this
kind of thing happens a lot, because I experienced... I mean, it wasn't this bad, but I had a problem with The Walking Dead Season 2 when it first came out, or the Episode 1 anyway, where I bought it from Gamefly, I think, and the key activated on Telltale's website, so I went there, activated the key, downloaded the game, and I needed to log into my Telltale account, but it didn't work, and I couldn't play the game. And I went on the forums, and loads of people had that very same problem, and it was a thing that happened with The Wolf Among Us as well, and it's because Telltale's servers are down. And apparently Steam users didn't have that problem, so people asked Telltale, like, Telltale weren't telling anybody about these problems. People asked Telltale, can we just have a Steam key, because that way we can play our games, and they weren't giving out Steam keys at all, and it's like, so we're going to fix the problem or what? I ended up pirating the game so I could play it, even though I had already paid for it, which is fucking ridiculous, you know. And they fixed the problem, but it's just like, they could have just solved the problem by not having this. Like, if your system is unreliable and in a consistent fashion, and it turns out that your Steam copies don't have the same problem, why don't you just give everybody Steam codes instead of keeping everyone in the dark and silently fixing it, you know? I wish small companies would just take the easy way out when it comes to this stuff. I mean, okay, fixing the bugs may not be as easy as I make it out to be now, but at the end of the day, it's probably going to do much better for their PR than saying, oh, please give us more money, we don't give a shit if you can't play the game.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I guess the most recent example would have been Battlefield, where it was, I mean...
EA didn't cause a problem for ages.
Well, it's not even EA. Again, it's more that nobody in the media covered it for like the first two or... It took like 2 or 3 months before it's like, oh, we should probably talk about it. And then like once somebody decided, oh, it's okay to talk about it, that's when everybody's like, oh, yeah, it's been buggy since launch. It's like, yeah, it's been buggy since launch. Why are we talking about it in January now? It's like when it becomes an issue for them. Because it's one of those things where... Oh, I guess consumers just kind of get the shaft because, oh, it's just a couple of people on the forums on Twitter complaining about it. Maybe it's a one-off, you know, it's an isolated issue. But there are a lot of things that pop up like this, and, like, Battlefield is still a buggy mess from what I understand.
And not to mention is every Battlefield game since Bad Company 1 has had launch problems. Like, you'd have thought at some point they would have had some kind of foresight to what these would be and put measures in place to prevent these, especially when they have a quote beta, unquote, you know? Which turned out to be more stable than the fucking releasing version, which is ridiculous. But, I mean, the people talk about the whole idea of ship it now, patch it later. It gets worse and worse to the point where now what we're talking about is you ship it now, you patch it never.
Yeah. It's because, and you know, for better or worse, I guess publishers are realizing what we talked about earlier, is you make all your money up front. People pay these games for a week or two, and then they move on to the next big game. So you're going to have that initial people being upset about it, but then they're just going to, you know, move on to the next thing. So why bother wasting money and resources on fixing it when it's only going to be a portion of the population? Like, it's a bigger issue with Battlefield because that's an online game and people continue to play that. But, I mean, Batman is like, oh, it's a... Like, how many people are actually still actively talking about Batman before this news came out?
Well, yeah.
And it's like, oh, so it's not worth the effort if it's only going to get five people to finish the game, or 5% of the people who bought it. So it's a terrible habit. It's a terrible attitude to have, but from a financial standpoint, I can kind of understand where they're coming from. Doesn't make it right.
No.
I can just understand it. So yeah, is there anything else you want to talk about before we wrap?
Nope.
Okay. No, not really.
Okay. So join us next week where we will talk about video game news. There's stuff going on right now, but I didn't want to bring it up until everything was finished. And then we'll talk about that next week. So for Martin, Daniel, and myself, this has been Dual World in episode 129. Change.